The ministers apology and Minister Nell, they are in the cabinet committee presenting some bills there as well. Thanks.
Good morning and morning to honourable members. In the A version, that's the version that's marked B23A of 2015.
That is the A version.
Yeah.
B version.
No, I'll just talk about the A version first.
Okay.
The A version contains all the amendments to all the clauses
that
the committee agreed to over the past few months. It's quite a lengthy document. And we made sure that all the amendments are there that the committee agreed to. And then all those amendments were worked into the original bill, which then resulted in the B version, B23B. And between ourselves on the one side and the committee section and the state law advisors and the parliamentary legal advisors, we made sure that everything that is in the A version are in fact contained in the B version. We checked and double-checked to make sure it's there. So all the amendments are, in fact, in this final version, B23B.
This one is the thick one. That is the totality of the bill. All amendments are included here. They're underlined for references by members.
Just to indicate here, they are not on the line. This is the final version as printed by the Credit Press for Parliament. So they're not on the line, but you need to compare, you know, the A version with the B version to make sure everything is there, which we've done. It is there. I can guarantee that all the amendments are there. I know some of the members are also checked over the past week to make sure it is there.
But just to ensure that members are not lost, B23B is the final one, the final bill. When you go towards the end of the bill, where we made amendment, page 63, the bolded areas there. Is mine correct? Page 63. Page 62 and That is part B. And that's a bill that we are dealing with. Just to ensure that we don't have separate bills, every member must know which bill we are dealing with. Okay. B23B of 2015. Okay. Professor, we are fine?
I can just indicate the schedule that you indicated in our chair, there, 62. That schedule contains amendments to other laws. Yeah. And for that reason, that schedule, you use the underline and the brackets to remove. But the text of the bill itself ends on page, just before the code of conduct, page 54. And then from 55 onwards are the schedules. So first the code of conduct and then the amendments to the other laws.
But all the amendments were put in because our report is very clear what we said must be amended. Clause 1, that is amended. Okay. Clause 1 was read about advisory committee. We agree that becomes a commission. And then cross-reference purposes. Clause 2, on page 7, we say also you omit may. It's omitted already. On page 7, line 23, after party, we propose that we insert any grouping of such party. Is that also put in? Is correctly located. State law advisor, are you happy? Let's move to clause 3 on page 8, in line 51, omit 67, and substitute that with 60. We are fine on that. Is it included on the bill? Yeah. No, the members must be satisfied. Clause 4 on page 9 in line 10, after by, to insert a resolution of each traditional council of such traditional community. Is it inserted? Because otherwise members can go there without reading this thing and cause more harm for us. Best of everything, state law advisory, I agree with that. It's fine, it's fine-tuned completely. Language is proper. Okay, clause 5 on page 10. In line 52, to omit advisory committee and substitute that commission. That's what members took as a decision, that we need a commission, not advisory committee. Is it included? Members are happy with that. It's included in their bill. On page 10, line 53, to omit 66, to substitute 58, those are consequential issues that we agree that will happen. Let's move to clause 9 on page 16, from line 10 to omit a reasonable time and substitute 90 days from the date of becoming aware of such clause. We have agreed on that. The rest then is consequential. The rest is consequential. On clause 10 on page 17 in line 16, to omit 64, 65, and 66, and substitute 54, those are consequential issues because we raise numbering changes as we amended the bill. That is clause 10. Clause 11 on page 19, in line 19, to omit reasonable time, 90 days was an issue again that we agreed on. Clause 12 on page 20, in line 38, to omit 60 days with 90 days. The rest is consequential. Clause 18, the issue there is on page 22, in line 1, to omit leader and to substitute that with leaders. The rest, again, is consequential. On page 22, line 31, to omit such a royal family, and then we move on that issue that we agreed with. Page 47 of our report, I think report is circulated to all members. page 23, line 36 of the bill, against leaders, very consequential, queens and queens. All other matters there that are consequential. Clause 16, again, a numbering issue that we're changing there. State law advisor, you are happy? You have done the work? Let's move on. Clause 17. Clause 17, general, is on page 28. Again, were issues there, and clause 18 again was an issue there of numbering. And then 66 to 58, all that was that a consequential issue of numbering. Clause 19 on page 30. Again, instead of saying 1 month, we said 2 months, okay, enough time. And the issue on page 13, line 17, to omit paragraph and to substitute that with disclose to the premier concerned the receipt of gift with a value above an amount that may be determined by such premier by notice in provincial gazette. That's what we amended. The rest really there were just consequential clauses.
Yes, sorry, just on that one.
Yeah.
Chair, didn't we agree that the minister would determine that rather than the premier? The reason I say that is you would have varying values determined by varying premiers. So in KZN they might say 500 Rand, whereas in Limpopo they might say 5,000 Rand. And I thought that we had agreed that it was the minister who would make that determination.
The team that we requested to put everything that we agreed on?
Jay, I'll check with Mungir also, but the way I remember it was that, remember this is substitution, so it replaces the old one that was there. But the notes indicated that it was the premier to determine. Maybe because I understand what the member is saying, there should maybe be should be norms and standards, but it differs from province to province also. I think that was probably the reason why it was left at premier.
I have no problem with the disclosure to the premier. I have a problem with the norm being set by the premier.
Norms are national. Norms and standards are national.
If you just agree to change the word premier in the last bit there to minister, then I'm happy.
Is any harm that is causing? Because the issue was to avoid the Eastern Cape saying this, Limpopo saying this, there's no national norms and standards what you declare. And then we may have a problem if you handle it that way. Honourable Son?
Last one that we should really avoid bureaucratizing this issue. And writing minister there can really make it more difficult, more awkward to do. Let's leave it as is. I think that's the best way of managing it. The number of standards, as they say in Constitution Jefferson, are national. And if there's anything that contradicts that national character, then we can look at it.
I'm sorry, Chair, but the norms are determined by the Premier according to this clause. In other words, above an amount to be as may be determined by such premier by notice in the Provincial Gazette. If the premier of Limpopo says the norm is 500 rand and the premier of the Eastern Cape says it's 5,000 rand, you don't have a national norm. All I'm saying is that the amount should be determined by the minister and published in the Government Gazette. I don't think that's unreasonable, and I think it's something that the department does on a daily basis as part of their regulation gazette.
State law advisor, what is your proposal?
Maybe wrong, but my understanding was that these gift issues are fairly varied from region to region, local to local, and we didn't want to come across as ensuring some imposition of sorts. Of course, when I say they are varied, I don't mean that we should complicate the matter by making it even more varied. But it was just to provide a bit of space so that there can be an engagement, if need be, as soon as possible, in as close as possible to where the traditional leaders are located.
Well, I'm thankful.
Thanks, Chair. But didn't we say, Chair, that it must take a tune of what is happening here at the national level, so that it will have one standard?
I think the point that Honorable Mason is raising, that we should avoid again bureaucratizing everything. But at the same time, general constitutional norms and standards are set by national ministries, though the implementation can take place in every level of the state. I think the point that is raised, Honorable Masondo, is that if the cutoff or the threshold is 500 rand in Gauteng, but in KZN is 1,000, 5,000 rand, therefore there is no norms and standards, because the national house of traditional leaders would be always be preferable to have norms and standards at the national level and allow that implementation through the provincial provinces and everywhere. Because they would declare at the local level, they would declare at the provincial level, they would declare also at the national level, those who serve at the national level. It seems can cause a lot of problem, teaching.
Yes, I think it has got to be standardized at national level. It will be similar to the norms and guidelines that we provide for the establishment of traditional councils and the other things, because the danger is that you have one province, you know, putting it at a high level or something, then when traditional leaders meet, then it causes those issues. I think it will have a knock-on effect on other clauses as well, on the same issue, which we need to...
Honorable Masondo, we are persuaded. We may be making an important point, but the problem that you will have is that generally in the country, all norms and standards are national, just to make uniformity in terms of approach. But how is administered is a separate issue in terms of the point that you are raising. It wouldn't make it difficult for local areas in Johannesburg if there's a traditional leader. There's no one at the moment, but there are quite a friend there. I suspect that you'll have a traditional leader there. And then those leaders, then we must have one line, general, on that. Because if it's not like that, Rami, the problem, Honorable Masono, the problem is that we will find other areas. Western Cape says the threshold is 5,000 rand. You go to KZN, says it's 500 rand. You go to other area, they put other standards. Far better to make it national and then assist us as a norm, that norms and standards are national, general. Okay.
Chair person, I was thinking about all the kinds of things that are currently happening in the different provinces and so on. Bottle of brandy, that type of thing, and so on.
Name booze, name
now, if to standardize. One that really too much standardization will not have to create other problems. I'll leave it.
You can leave it that one, Onama. One day you are also going to be a traditional leader of Soweto. A traditional leader in Soweto.
Yeah.
It's about the value, really, truly speaking. And the best.
For the record, then, Chair, the words such premier will have to be replaced by the minister. And at the end of that particular insertion, the word provincial must come out, so he refers to Kazé.
Yeah.
Now, then a similar change should be made in line with this to clause 20. If you look on the A-list, clause 20,
yeah.
Paragraph 3 thereof is a similar provision. So the same will have to be done there. And, of course, those two changes must be made then on the B version also by the printer.
Okay. Can we proceed? Clause 23. Then the page 32, the lines there. Line 15, line 26, line 36. 37, line, of course, 56. And then what we are saying there when you are amending it on C was that the minister must, in consultation with the Minister of Finance and after consultation with the premiers, by notice in the Gazette, determine the minimum standard to be complied with by a premier for the purposes of paragraph B1 to B7. And all those sentences C and D were amended accordingly. That is page 32, line 56. Page 32, after line 56. Those amendments were C and D, and then they're already inserted. There is no issue. Again, page 32, line 58, there was a lot of discussion about may and must. We took a long time, really, but we ended up agreeing that we'll omit the first may and put must there. And there was a lot of discussion about that. On clause 24, on page 33, what we raised there, honorable members, was that after we said that we must insert a prior consultation with the relevant community represented by such council. And then, of course, that community will be consulted before anyone arrives at the decision. But it's not in consultation, just to allow a space for leadership to work. And then on clause 24, page 33, there was just really consequential issue. On page 33, after line 40, we insert that to review all partnership and agreement as contemplated in section 63. And these are issues that we discussed a lot, really. We said that the department go back, include this thing of consultation, because many people are raising this matter, that traditional leaders simply take decision with no consultation, enter into agreement with many partnership, but they don't really report even back to community. This one now is included, and that they must be, we are happy with that one. That is included, and Honorable Mthethwa is happy with that one. Just to avoid that in future, one in Oslapayan is busy taking decision about Amalash, it doesn't consult anyone, but we all know the impact of those things to communities. They're not even consulted there. Can also happen in Soweto, Honorable Mansondo, when a leader also there, traditional leader of Mdin, who may have that situation. That without consulting, we are mining sand. People are not even consulted. And the issue of consultation, I think now, clause one, is fine. Also, the NGO sector, Honorable Mthethwa, they were raising this issue of consultation. And then I think the committee felt very strong that we can't have public participation just for symbolic reasons, you must take issues that have raised. The bill, in fact, has accommodated a lot of issues that were raised by communities. And then I think the community, broadly speaking, they'll be happy that as well.
Chair, there was, and I might be missing it here, but there was a discussion about partnerships, agreements, contracts, etc., that were entered into prior to this bill coming into effect, and that the Premier would have the power to review it in terms of this clause. But I might be missing it. I don't see it.
I think we are missing it. I saw it on the clause that provincial department, they would deal with this matter, the Premier as well.
Chair, Honourable Member, on the B version, on page 53, that's in the transitional provision.
Okay.
There's a sub-clause 22.
Is included there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we move, Ollis? Clause 25. All matters there, colleagues, of course, B, with the point that we see on page 34, after line 6, insert what we said before: a department makes provision for the role of contemplated in section 1. Such department must, in the case of a national department, obtain concurrence of the minister and consult the national house. In case of a provincial one, again, it's consequential they must consult also their local structure plan. Clause 27 really is very consequential there. One of the dates that we raised there that we must omit 31st May, because they talk about 2017, but now we have taken to 2022. And I think it's amended accordingly, Pastor. Yes, sir.
Chair, I'm not trying to be funny here, but if we read 25.2b.1, before a department makes provision for a role as contemplated in Section 1, such a department must, in the case of a national department, obtain the concurrence of the minister. Now, if we're talking about the minister, it's the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. But do they not need to obtain the concurrence of the relevant minister as well? In other words, if it's a mining issue, the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs, Mineral and whatever it's.
Mineral.
And, yeah, mineral affairs.
And resources.
Yeah.
So of course, would be a normal way of logical way.
Thanks, Chair. Remember, these roles will be allocated in terms of the laws that those departments administer. So those particular law, and it may differ from law to law, but that law will determine how they must do it and whose consent they need. So it will depend on the particular law that they administer.
All they need is the Minister.
Well, this will require that they must also get the Minister of COPTA's consent, but that law, let's say the Minerals Act, may require other consent as well. So this is in addition to what that law requires.
Of course, all ministers would consult each other. If there's an issue that deals with mineral and energy, of course the energy minister would be consulted, also would consult COPTA. Generally, they would do this thing and they ensure that they work in that situation. Okay. Can we move?
But what is the practice now, Chair? Maybe let's be told about the practice so that we don't find ourselves overlapping to the other.
I think the lawyers will assist, but as far as I know, the practice is that the minister responsible for administering a part of an act just does that. Generally, it's very rare to have consultation with other departments that go and set in and that. If a matter is about money, surely the finance minister must go and consult her. If an issue is about mineral, Honorable Zwane should be consulted. Of course, we are not making the bill for current minister. I'm not saying that. Ministers must be consulted. And then that's a problem that we would have, that one law would be administered by various departments. That one section is administered there that deals with water, would be in water and sanitation, all that. But I think the point that Melham is raising, that there should be consultation at least. And then it seems we've already included that in terms of the law as it stands now. Okay. That we don't have one Minister Mteto, not Minister Mteto Anati, but Minister Mteto Enoch. And then just doing the way he he doesn't care what is the impact of what he's doing to another department. It's possible Nyambose also to be a coming minister. Let's move on. Can we move to clause 28? That is on page 34. We have omitted something there, that the National House consists of senior traditional leaders and senior coalition leaders elected by each provincial house in accordance with the provision, paragraph B, section 29. And then where relevant has been contemplated. And then we have already included a lot of issues there, the clauses. We wanted to elaborate further on that just to ensure that it's easy for understanding. DG, state law advisor, we are happy with what we said to Mazamen. When we read it, we think that we have made a point. And the language also is simple. You can read and understand. Many of us are not legal-minded individuals. Can we move to... That is clause 28. We have amended clause 28. Not very substantial, but there were a lot of issues that were amended there. And then was the B, was C, and then was 2A, 2B, and the general order clauses there were covered accordingly and simplified the way you requested as members to do. Clause 29, on page 35, of course there was a 60 days to 30 days or the consequential really changes because of the major issue that we have amended in terms of clause 28. Clause 30, that is on page 35. Well, of course, there was a lot of discussion about this one. And then we included imprisonment. Then we said that we insert of more than 12 months without an option of a fine. There was a discussion really about how to work here as member of parliament or councillors and other person there. But we can't have national structures differ in terms of how we define eligibilities and other issues there. There was a lot of discussion. We amended accordingly. State law advisory think we are correct in terms of law because we have a lot of discussion as members on this issue. I hope we are correct in terms of the state. That's what. We are happy with that? Okay. We must consult you, otherwise we may take us to court. Can we move on, colleagues? Deal with clause 31. There are very consequential issues, really, there. Just changes of Roman figure 1, 2, 3. Clause 33 is a similar issue. Always must, and may has been a very big difficult thing amongst us. I think that we didn't confuse legal-minded brains here. To start writing must, even if it should be made in terms of the language. We hope that it didn't cause harm to you, Pastor. Of course, members take a final decision in terms of the law. The constitutional court would interpret it accordingly. That we don't force you to put must, even the language doesn't agree. Because we want must, and instead of may as you were proposing it. But it seems we didn't cause harm to you. Can we move to clause 34? That is on page 26. In line 51, to omit president or any other person designated by the president and to substitute that chief justice or a judge designated by the chief justice. But an issue that the National House is very important, give them some status. Members of parliament, they take an oath or affirmation and it's conducted by I think it's Chief Justice in Mukwe at the moment. And then just give them some responsibility also at the national level. That the minister shouldn't take be mandated by the law to sit there like a judge and all of us will come, we bow and we take an oath or affirmation. And then we thought that won't be correct. We think again it didn't cause harm. The state law advisor, we are happy with that. It's defendable in court. That the minister can't to him. I thought I was going to feel sorry for a minister sitting there and taking Amakhosonke ezalapha ezobhawa, I think. They were refusing anyway, they want to refuse. The DG, they're not going to agree on that. No, but with judge, they will be there. The minister sitting there like yourself, you are part of the ministries anyway, sitting there and come there. Honorable Masip, you come as in course, you are power with minister. At least. Yeah. 37, clause 37, is a consequential issue then, because we have agreed in this amendment. Clause 38, that is on page 39, from line 16, omit paragraph B. And that paragraph was omitted, and they said that we should deal with the B, new B. That tech issue?
There was actually no change in the content. The part that must stand.
The part must stand, yeah. Clause 39. Any parliamentary bill which direct affect, there was just really to say people must participate fully. If a bill is about coenzyme, indigenous knowledge system in terms of medicinal issues, they must be consulted, must participate. Honorable must sit there. If it's about Inkomo, must be participating there and two other issues there. There was no bigger issue there. Clause 14, of course, was that king, queens, and principal traditional leader. Principal traditional leaders, again, are those that were referred at a certain point as kings. And then the commission says, you don't supposed to be kings, we're not from the right house. And then as they pass on, then their sons and daughters become senior, what we call their principal traditional leaders. It seems that is a permanent status until the law is amended after 100 years, I guess. Maybe, although they can also be principal traditionalists forever, and they knew that they were from the wrong house anyway, even from the beginning. But I think for a transitional period, we are hanging that way. Clause 42, page 40, line 15, again, was very easy. We support the subject of budget allocation by department. Was a discussion about these matters, and members, they will recall that you can't just say allocate money, but you should say that, of course, everything is reasonable in terms of the budget allocated. That the DG, it doesn't have a budget that says 4 billion. Any department got only 1 billion. Can't work, you can't really keep money on that. That is an approach that was taken. Let's move to clause 43 on page 40. Again, was a consequential issue there. Again, kings, queens, principal, traditional leaders. Clause 46, and what we requested there was to insert 3, the National House must subject subsection 1 establish ethics committee. There was a lot of discussion about this, but we agreed that they would need also an ethics committee, a committee on Honorable Masondo in terms of members of parliament. I think the DG, they would come for a workshop with Honorable Masondo once this become law. We should take them through how you deal with this thing of ethics, because I think we say they must have an ethics committee. Can we move to clause 47? There we only say that omit two-third majority. We thought it was too high to put our traditional leaders so high. First, they are not lawmakers. You are the one who make laws here. Then allow them space, 50 plus 1, general, to take decision. They won't change the constitution, Honorable Melham, my God. They are not. I'm told that anyway, historically, DG, I think we have read a lot of history about Buffalo City. I'm told that historically, that there was a ship there that was moving from London, and unfortunately wrecked there. But Melham was part of that. And Melham can be in course. Can we proceed, colleagues? I think we are through with clause 49. Now, 49, general there, we put again the entire issue there, consequential issues. We agreed May to 2022. I think they have put it in to allow space for the current existing traditional councils.
and we move on until then. If local houses have not been established in the same proportion, is an issue that is Roman figure 2. It seems everything there is included. Clause 50, page 43. It's a very consequential clause, really. We're changing the date because initial we've agreed on them. There are no major issues for members to consider. On chapter 4, on page 44, in line 22, I advise our committee, of course we agree now is commission, and then that will deal with what we call it now, Commission on Traditional Leadership Dispute and Claims. That's what the law will say if the president agrees with us after Parliament have adopted what we are trying to do. It's consequential, really, now. Everywhere, in terms of clause 59, it's just commission, as we agreed on that. Clause 60, the consequential changes that were subjected, that were proposed. But on that one, on page 48, after line 54, we proposed that the names of the persons, deputy persons, and members appointed in terms of paragraph A, together with the date from which appointment takes effect, must be published in a gazette. Just to ensure that nothing happens without people knowing who are the people who are appointed and what is the date, and then to ensure that at least a gazette will, in fact, it's just to announce it, just to announce it for people to know who's appointed for what position. The rest, the honorable members, again, it's consequential, changing advisory committee to commission. Can we move to clause 61 on page 49? In line 20, to omit advisory committee, again, is almost consequential changes. Clause 62, there was a new clause there that we follow, that the following be new clause. The point that we raise that conditions of appointment of members of commission. We said that 54, one, the minister must, after consultation with the Minister of Finance, determine the conditions of appointment of members of commission, take into account the role, duties, and responsibility of members, the level of expertise, condition of employment may differ respect of the chairperson's commission, full-time and part-time members. We have already just taken from what is existing in terms of the commission. I'm not sure who's the commission now. Who's the judge now responsible for the commission? It was, what was that one? Was it Sharpo first? Then was it Tembu? Utolo? Okay. Clause 65, honorable members, there again, we're just again putting consequential issues and amendment there of advisory committees. Advisory commission, and then we ended up saying that is a commission rather than advisory committee. It was very consequential on clause 65. Clause 66, similar situation, you members. New clause that you proposed was that the following be a new clause. Of course, we're including dispute there. That this commission will deal with claims and dispute. Honorable Madam
Chair, my concern is around 59.1b.1, where
one,
it says...
1b.1, okay.
Yeah, where it says, provincial legislation may provide for a mechanism to deal with traditional leadership disputes, excluding any disputes relating to a king or queen or kingship or queenship.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have a problem with that, but I think there needs to be a proviso that such provincial legislation cannot contradict anything that is contained in this clause. Because otherwise, we're essentially saying they can introduce whatever they like, and it doesn't. It would then supersede the clause.
Legal brains, is there any problem on that one, in terms of the law interpretation? Yes, sir.
Chair, I'm trying to remember now all the details around the disputes and so on. But remember, it's a concurrency. So currently, some of the provincial laws already make provision
for how to deal with disputes. Not all of them, but some do. So the what this clause is saying basically is, look, where you have provincial legislation that already provides for this, you deal with it in terms of that. But we're bringing in an additional clause, which is the sub-clause 3 there, that says when you deal with it, province, you may also refer this to national for advice and inputs. Then this clause here, the rest of this clause, is basically saying if you did not make provision in your provincial law for this, as you should have done, then you use this particular clause 59, except, of course, for any disputes relating to kings or queens or kingship or queenships, because that is the prerogative of the person who is the president who recognizes. Thanks, Chair. Okay.
Chair, I don't dispute any of that. My concern is that what 59B1 says is that provincial legislation would then supersede 59. Because it says provincial legislation may provide for a mechanism to deal with traditional leadership disputes. And that legislation would then supersede this. So all I'm saying is that we add in a proviso there that no provincial legislation may contradict what is in 59. So that the provincial legislation is then subject to what's contained in 59.
You know, the current situation, there are lots of contradictions. That's why we're talking about alignment.
Yeah.
So it will be important to put a clause like that so that, you know, we make sure that they align whatever they come up with at provincial with the national.
Does it cause harm to consider that in terms of the law?
The provision of the Constitution, I think it's 146. That says that where national legislation provides for norms and standards or a framework or something else, there's three things, I think, and there's a conflict, then the national law prevails.
Check precedent. Just work on it. Of course, the national laws can't be undermined by provincial law. When the national law exists, takes precedent. The interpretation in terms of provincial law, yes.
I note that, but I think that you're basically giving permission for them to do their own thing here. That's the only thing that worries me. You're basically saying, go away and do your own thing. And anyway, I'm willing to be guided by the...
No, but the DG also was almost saying that we should have a proviso. Does it cause harm? That's the point that I'm saying. Even if the Supreme Law accepts that, there will be no harm to put it. That's to ensure that there's no variations in terms of interpretation, and ended up a lot of contradiction in terms of the law. I think that's a point that is being made. I think DG also, we are persuaded with that approach. I think the team can look at it already. It can't take a law to do it. Is it work? Can it work?
It's fine. It is in 146.2 of the Constitution, but we can do that because between us, myself, State Law Advice and Tisha, we'd
just
like to do it now, so that the committee...
It's just one way to read.
Yeah.
Just one
way. We'll present something now to you in a minute or two.
Okay. Just one way that says you can't just do as you wish when there's a national law. At least must be recognized and accepted as a national law. That you don't have here as well.
You know, a very good example is the Northwest legislation on the reconstitution of the provincial house. You know, they've written it in such a way that it becomes difficult for national house to be constituted because it's not in line with the Framework Act.
Okay.
So I think for the purposes of this, it's better to prevent it rather than wait for it to be done. Yeah.
Okay, the team, I think, is finalized. It's just one word, really, flowing from there.
A few more than one word.
Okay.
The proposal is, look, it's only this clause 59 that deals with this. So what we propose is that at the end of that B1, to add a proviso, just to say that provided that such legislation, meaning that provincial legislation, may not be inconsistent with this section.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fine.
Committee will accept it.
Because it covers really that. They can take this one that is existing and draft is fine, but to protect ourselves, it doesn't cause harm. Okay?
Can we move on? Then we are through with clause 59. A, B, and C. That is a premier responsibility that we have given the must. It was made before, and we changed it to must. It must do the following: A, B, and then 3, 4, and then 67. Colleagues, there, we agreed that on line 32 to insert, any regulation made under this section must, within 90 days of the notice contemplated in subsection 1, be tabled in Parliament for notice. Does it cause harm? I think that amendment was very helpful. Just for noting purposes, really, not for doing anything. Clause 68, on page 51, after line 45, insert, a premier must, within 30 days of delegating any power or duty in terms of subsection 1, or withdrawal or amending such delegation in terms of subsection 3, inform the minister accordingly. Again, just to ensure that they are aligned, really. We don't have situation where things are amended, they are given delegation, no one knows what the delegation there. It's just really assisting us to have a proper way. Clause 70 is consequential issues there. Very consequential because we have dealt with them already in preceding clauses. And then until page 54, after line 53, insert the following, that is 17, notwithstanding provision of subsection 12. And then there's a lot of issues there that we are raising. Paragraph 18, 19, 20, 22. Yeah. And paragraph 22, A, B, C, and then those are issues that were raised, really. They are well covered when we try to understand them, we read them. I didn't find anything really. I think the team worked very well to refine it the way we have agreed as a committee. Can we move? Well, I guess that the schedule really is not necessary for us so much, but let's go through. Of course, clause 73, what we're saying, that omit 2015 and put 2018. Because the intention that this law, this bill now, Parliament may pass it before the end of the year. But NCOP has to do some work. And then NCOP may also decide to consult, as we consulted while then it will take long. But 2018, at least, it should come in. That's why we amended it to 2022 instead of 2018, because we allow space for the existing council on that issue. Schedule 2, there seems there's no issue there, Schedule 2. Schedule 3, those are consequential dates, rate changes of dates and putting in 2018, 2015. Schedule 4 is a long title. Schedule 4, arrangement of sections. On page 4, in line 15, omit an advisory committee again to index there, putting those issues. Part 1, establishment of committees, appointment of members, vacancies, all that doesn't take us anywhere. Part 2, we are through with that. Can we then leave that unless there are some issues that are raised? Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. So that members are aware, something that we, because it's not part of the formal bill in the sense of what the committee must adopt, but I want to assure members that we have also basically redrafted the objects memorandum to reflect all the amendments that the committee has effected. So to make sure that once this goes to the NCOP, that the object memorandum talks to the B version.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chair.
Chair,
can we get that revised memorandum, please?
Is it in the B?
Is it in the B?
Yeah.
I didn't see it. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Found it.
Yeah. Well, our members, can we then agree that we are happy? Can we have a mover? We adopt now the report and Honorable Mtembu.
If we have made some amendments here, which we've done today, we've made a couple of minor amendments.
Too minor.
Yeah. Can we adopt without having an amended version of the bill in front of us?
I think really it was just the wording only. Because we'll be agreeing based on the proposals or amendments. There are two areas.
Yeah.
One is already proviso, it's covered. What was another one?
The minister and the cabinet.
Really, I'm not sure that could stop us from adopting the bill. Legal mind, is there any issue there? That's one.
Yes, Chairperson, and most importantly, it's on the record. We have read the proposal, so Ronaldo did read the proposal, so they will be included in the record.
Okay. Can we move on? That's one.
We had made a request, Chairperson, that some high-level summary of the bill be presented. I hope that idea is not lost.
Which one?
The idea of a high-level summary of the bill.
For your committee?
No. When I raised, I was concerned initially that there wasn't a high-level summary, but I was told that it's part of the process of presenting the bill. But I don't know.
Okay.
I may be missing a point. But
is it?
I think the objects memo, it's a summation of that, and it is the one that he's talking about, the amendment thereof.
The bill is a Section 76 bill. It's going to be taken through the NCOP processes. But I think Honorable Masondo says that the high-level summary is already there. What is the object of the bill? What are you intending to do? All the issues are there already. And can we move forward and adopt the bill as we amended it here? Honorable Mtembu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the amendment bill with the amendment made today.
And Honorable Mtato? I saw that you are raising a hand to second. Of course, the DA is very happy with the bill broadly, but they will reserve their rights.
Yes, Chair.
Honorable Manager?
Reserve our rights, Chair.
but as it stands, at least you are happy with it. That's what is very important. Very important.
Chair, let's say that it's an improvement.
It's an improvement. Okay. Okay, colleagues, the report by the committee also should be accepted. Because the report is based on the amendment that we have taken. Can you put the report in Section 76? The NCOP may completely reject everything. But I don't think they will be so daring to do it. The National Assembly is National Assembly. Yes, Petition.
Thanks very much. I just wanted to thank the committee for, you know, it's quite a while that you've been working on this deal. And we've learned ourselves as well, because through the process, we thank you very much for really dealing with this up to this far.
Thank you. Okay, Honourable Members, the report has been adopted. The bill is taken, is amended, agreed to. Moved by Honorable Mthembu, seconded by Honorable Mthethwa. And then the DA can reserve their right on some of these issues. But they're relatively happy. Relatively happy. They're relatively happy with the bill. Of course, they would. No, I'm saying that relatively happy. You are not totally happy. But I guess you can live with this happiness.
Well,
okay. Colleagues, thank you very much for this, and so thank the department and Dr. Best and the team. Thank also the state law advisor. Thank for the parliamentary team. We know that they are overstretched, really. They're not here right now. Yes, well.
Can I just make a comment? I think this has been one of the most productive pieces of legislation that we've dealt with, and it's certainly been conducted in a great spirit of cooperation and trying to achieve the best for our country, and I'd really like to thank everybody involved, and particularly the team, because they have gone out of their way to make sure that what we propose has been included, and yourself, obviously. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mayor. I must also thank you for your contribution. And I think we have really contributed on this matter, all of you as Honourable Members. Thank also the DG and the team for the work that was done. The state law advisor has been with us every day, every time. And sometimes we're a little bit harsher to those who are legal minds. But it was a necessary harshness that was assisting us to be sharper. The point that we are raising, that when we are called by the court at a certain point, they mustn't say we didn't apply our minds. They must say that we have done everything humanly possible. They shouldn't say this one were the most useless people. They didn't apply their mind. They just pushed things through wrongly. Thank you for that. Let us move on, colleagues, and deal with the proposed. There's a report. Department. Legislative program for 2017. 2017 is over already. I'm told that next week is almost November. By December, we won't do anything on this. It's for consideration. DG.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. There are two pieces of legislation where we are looking at amending certain sections of those legislations. On the 21st of February, we came to come and present the intention of amending those sections, some of the sections, because of our experience and the feedback on the ground. And the Municipal Structures Amendment Bill, as we speak today, is presently being presented to the Cabinet Committee on Governance and Administration by the Minister and Deputy Minister now, with a view of obtaining approval for introducing it to Parliament. And the proposed amendments, focus on the two pieces of legislation. The first one is Municipal Demarcation Act, and the second one is Municipal Structures Act. We will also focus on the time frames for the legislative program, also just to give the honorable members a sense of how much time this work will take us. I wanted to start with the introduction of the team that is working on this, unlike the first one that has been working with the honorable members for quite some time. With a delegation here, we have Mr. Tebogo Mtashuping on my right, and I'll ask the others to raise their hands as I introduce them, so that he is the acting DDG for institutional development. He's heading this work. And then there is also Sia Ndankehle. If you could raise your hand wherever you are, is also dealing with this area of legislation. And we also have the head of our legal section, Ms. Vuyonda. And we also have the ministry staff that is here as well, and then the executive manager in my office, Mrs. Gosnell, as well, is here. Mr. Mutashuping is going to take us through the presentation. Honorable Chair, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. This is the presentation in relation to the two pieces of legislation that we intend introducing to Parliament. As the DG has already alluded, we are today, through the Minister and the Deputy Minister, presenting before the Cabinet Committee on the said two bills. This is the outline of the presentation. I will start with the Municipal Demarcation Amendment Bill that we have drafted. I must indicate, Honorable Members, that this is a very long presentation, but I will try to go through it quickly. Result of the proposals and an engagement that we had with the Demarcation Board, and among other driving factors that influenced the said proposed amendments is in relation to the inputs that we received from the previous boards, the demarcation process review task team that was initiated by the former Minister Baloyi, lessons learned by the current board from previous determinations, legislation, legislative board litigation, and all other these other factors. We took into account all the other driving factors that made us to agree with the demarcation board that we needed to look intensively into the existing act and propose certain amendments. We subsequently had a two-day technical legislative review workshop on the 2nd and the 3rd of March of this year, and these are the associations and role players that also attended that particular legislative review workshop. A thorough analysis was done, and it was a well-attended workshop, and we realized that because of the magnitude of the proposed amendments to the bill, we then had to deal with repealing the whole act and replacing it with the new act. This is the proposal. It will go close by force in relation to the present bill, the present act, and it was felt that we these are the areas that we had to attempt to amending the Demarcation Act. Chapter 1 that lists the interpretation, Chapter 2 relating to the demarcation board itself, the composition thereof, Chapter 2 that relates to the demarcation processes, Chapter 4 that relates to the municipal capacity assessment that has not been done over years, and Chapter 5 that deals with a number of issues that are included in the bill itself. Coming to the section that we intend amending, Section 1, there is a proposal that we needed to refer to the Board of Directors as opposed to the Board, that was in terms of Section 4, and then that the term Demarcation Municipal Board should refer to the organization made up of the board itself, the executive and the employees, so meaning that the change will be made in relation to how we describe the board, describing it as a board of directors that also included the MDP as including the board itself, the executive and the employees. And that also relates to the what the chair, the manager, which is in the old act, and we are proposing that we replace that with what you call the chief executive officer, taking into account the terms in relation to the Public Finance Management Act. So we are bringing this in line with the municipal, the Public Finance Management Act. We also looked at the following definitions that should be inserted in the bill, and because we are now trying to migrate this to be in line with the Public Finance Management Act, we felt that the remuneration process of the board should be also be included and be provided for the recommendation by the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, meaning that we are saying that the board should also be remunerated in accordance with how the board is going to recommend to the minister and the president in relation to the remuneration of the board. We are also proposing the inclusion of the political office bearers. That includes the position of the chairperson, deputy chairperson, secretary, deputy secretary, and treasurer of a registered political party, nationally or in any other province. This is the definition that we had in the present Municipal Systems Act that relates to the definition of political office bearers in relation to the members of the board who might not necessarily hold this particular positions in political parties for them to qualify to be in the board. Section 1, also as I've already alluded to, is in relation to us including all the other facets that relates to the Public Finance Management Act so that it is in line with the reporting and the oversight that Parliament should have over the Municipal Demarcation Board in terms of reporting. Section 2, it is a proposed amendment of this section that relates to, as I've already indicated, where we are going to replace the board with the Board of Directors. Section 3 relates to alignment of the issues of the Municipal Finance Management Act in specific relation to the board referring to the accounting authority, the board being the accounting authority of the Municipal Demarcation Board. Section 4 relates to the section that includes the insertion of Section 5.4 to include that the board may generate revenue for the purposes of funding organizational projects that cannot be accommodated from the allocation. But this will be done, if the board is to raise revenue, this should be done in accordance with the regulations of the National Treasury, so that there should not be undue influence on the independence of the board when they raise revenue for other projects that they have. Yes. Section 5, we are proposing, as indicated, the alignment of the PMFMA in relation to what should happen. For example, the following additional subsections are amended to include in the board the delimitation of WAS to conduct municipal capacity assessment, which has not been recently been done by the board, and also to make recommendations to Parliament on provincial boundary matters. As you are aware, that the Municipal Demarcation Board's responsibility is for municipal boundaries, but we are proposing that also they must have a take in relation to the provincial boundaries. The section on composition, the section is, we are proposing that it should be amended where we refer to in the present act that it should reflect the regional diversity. We should include the wording that it should compose of broadly representative of the South African society. That does not only restricted to the boundary, or to the regional boundary purposes, but also to the broader representative of the South African society. Section 7 is in relation to setting out, in addition to all the other qualifications that we have set in the original act, but we are proposing that because the board felt that there is a need that we have the inclusion of IT expertise in the board. So we are including this particular section that there should be people who are going to be appointed as the board. They may also, some of them, have this particular expertise. Section 8 relates to the amendment of the section that provides additional requirements for the establishment of the panel by adding new members to the board. When we interview the members of the board, we then are proposing that we should include one representative from the National Assembly and one representative from the National House of Traditional Leaders, because their inputs in relation to the interview of the panel will be of importance in relation to looking at the diversity of problems that are realized in relation to the demarcation of wards in municipalities. Section 9 is in relation to the term of office of the board. At present, it is for 5 years, and we are proposing that that should be extended to a period of 7 years. Section 10 is in relation, as I've already indicated, that we want the board to be remunerated, the board members to be remunerated in accordance with the Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers Act, and we are also proposing that this should be included in Section 10, so that there is an alignment between the board and other public office bearers when the Commission makes recommendation. Section 11 is in relation to the minister having to be given the discretion to also appoint a deputy chairperson of the board as full-time. At present, only the chairperson of the board is full-time. So we are proposing that the deputy, therefore, the minister may use the discretion to appoint that that person on a full-time basis. Section 12 is in relation to the casting vote by the chairperson of the board, which will enable the chairperson of the board to have a deciding casting vote in an instance where there is a stalemate. We are making provision that the board may then have to issue a casting vote. Section 13 relates to good governance and in relation to the key four principles. We are proposing that the inclusion thereof. Section 14, good governance also. Section 15, it provides for the delegation by the board of its powers of excluding the power to make the final decision on the determination of municipal boundaries to the director of the board, the committee of the board, or an employee. This being said, any other delegated powers given to the board or given to the director of the board, the committee of the board, or the employee, the power to determine shall not be delegated to anybody but it's the responsibility of the municipal demarcation board. Section 16, it's in relation to code of conduct, that the board of the directors of the board are expected to behave in a particular manner, and any contravention of that particular code of conduct will result in a misconduct for that particular board member. So we are making possible that certain things should be done, certain things should happen in the board, and contrary to that will comply that will comprise of misconduct. Section 17. It is to clarify the role of the board and that of the CEO. That we are proposing that we are removing the word manager and replacing it with the word the chief executive officer to be in line with the performance in line with the Public Finance Management Act. Section 17.3 provides for that only a member of the administration to act in the absence of the CEO. This provides certainty in terms of good governance, so that when there is in the absence of the CEO, then someone should be delegated to be dealing with certain functions of the chief executive officer. Section 18 is in relation to we are aligning the conditions of employment of employees of the board to be in line with that of the public service, so that there should be smooth understanding of the conditions of the employees of the board rather than placing them somewhere outside the public service scenario. Section 19. It's aimed at the board to having to deal or being allowed to outsource in instances where they do not have the internal capacity to deal with certain things, especially of a technical nature. That the board will then have to utilize that, and the board will be allowed then to remunerate for the purposes of services rendered by service providers in this instance. Only in instances where the board does not have the technical capacity in-house. Section 20 is in. I've already indicated alluded to the fact that the board may receive other financial resources outside, but only in accordance with the regulations of National Treasury. So whatever funding that will be sourced by the board, we are proposing that should be allowed, but it should be regulated in terms of what is already in existence in the National Revenue Fund. Section 21. As I've already indicated, it's in relation to the responsibilities of the CEO in as far as the PFMA is concerned. So the accounting officer of the demarcation board will have to be answerable, as indicated, in relation to the Performance Management Act, which was not the case previously in the present act. Section 22 provides for the financial statement and the record of the municipal demarcation board to be audited annually by the Auditor General. That's what we are proposing. Section 23, you are trying to clarify the MDB's accountability and its alignment to the Public Finance Management Act. We are saying that on an annual basis, as it is required by the Public Finance Management Act, the Demarcation Board will then have to report and submit their report annually to the two houses of Parliament, so that there should be oversight, a role played by Parliament in relation to the finances given to the Municipal Demarcation Board. Section 24 is in relation to the municipality's capacity to execute any other function in line with the MEC, the minister's allocated powers and functions when it determines the municipal boundary. That we are saying that when the board determines the determination of municipal boundaries, they should look into account the powers and functions as determined by the MEC and the Minister for that particular municipality before finalizing the determination. Section 25 is in relation to certain things that should be taken into account in addition to what is already in existence when the Demarcation Board determines the determination of boundaries. Common geostatistical building blocks, relevant national development policies in place, relevant policy and legislation relating to the institutional functionality of the organization of local government, and also national endowment resources, assets, business investment, and other drivers of economic growth. So these other factors, in addition to the ones that are already in existence, should also be included when the Demarcation Board decides on the demarcation of municipal boundaries. Section 26 relates to the amendment where we are proposing that we should migrate Section 2 of the Structures Act into the Municipal Demarcation Act, that is relates to the different types and categories of municipalities. That particular whole section should then be migrated to the Municipal Demarcation Act. Section 27 makes provision that the board will only do determinations regarding the categorization and amalgamation of any boundary change which will affect the movement of more than one or all in a municipal every after 10 years. There has been an agreement with ourselves and the board that this constant redetermination of boundaries hampers planning, and we're proposing that it should be done at least after 10 years where there is a major boundary termination. Only technical aspect of the determination may be done within the 10-year period, but the major ones, we are proposing that they should be done after 10 years to allow proper planning. Section 27 is in relation to the determination based on the extent of changes and the align major boundary changes to a shift in national population census. That we need to amend to allow minimum requirements to be met by applications. That any other request to the minister and to the board, by the minister or to the board, that should be done by a proper motivation as to why this request should be made. And that should also be followed by proper and extensive preliminary public consultation, and that the minister also, on making requests, the minister will also be putting the motivation for such requests for boundary changes. Section 26, we are proposing that we leave it as it is in the original Act, and Section 29, we are proposing that there should be an investigation done, a thorough investigation done before any boundary determination should be made. So the board will be equipped with sufficient information and data before they can make any boundary determination, so that we minimize unhappiness in relation to the decision that has been taken by the board. So there will be investigation, there will be public participation before an amendment to the boundary should be made. Section 33 provides the mechanism in relation to community participation in demarcation matters. We are all aware that there has been an outcome in relation to the process that has been followed in the present Act in relation to communication and public participation. So we are outlining from 30 to 33 the role that has to be taken by the board to effectively communicate with communities before a boundary determination can be finalized. Section 33, we're also saying that once the board has taken a decision, this should be gazetted so that it becomes public knowledge to everyone in relation to the outcome of the determination by the board. Section 34, it relates to the what delimitation of what delimitation in municipalities. And we say after the minister publishes the formula for determination of the number of councillors, the board publishes a timetable for determination of what the board may amend the timetable on good cause shown. So the board will not willingly change the timetable when they decide on the ward delimitation, so that we bring certainty to the process of ward delimitations in municipalities. Section 35 is in relation to metros, and the same section that relates to how we are going to handle the ward delimitation process in metros. Section 36 is in accordance to what can be allowed for variation, that the number of voters may not deviate by 15% when we do the deviation, when the MEC does the deviation. And if a deviation occurs, it may not, if there is any deviation, not deviate by 15%, but not exceed 30% of the norm. This is in relation to us avoiding fragmentation of continuous staff build-up to the area, and also to accommodate voting stations that fall outside the ward. So if we do that, we will be able to assist the voting in the process of boundary delimitations, so that we allow a ward boundary to physically feature all other areas, be it in the traditional areas or what, for the board to make a final determination. Section 37 also deals with the mechanism that has to be followed by the board in publishing the decision of what delimitation processes. So those are the process that has to be followed, the mechanism that has to be followed. Section 38 to the section 47, it's in relation to the proposal that we are making for the establishment of the demarcation appeals authority. That we are proposing that there should be this appeals authority, so that before people who are objecting to the decision to determine what boundaries can go to court, there should be a process that allows them to exhaust all local avenues before the matter can be taken to court, and so that the decision of the board, if there is any dissatisfaction, can be subjected to the appeals board. We are putting section 32, section 39, that relates to the function of the appeals board, and also the regulations that the minister may have in outlining the functions and the working of that particular appeals board. So this will be subject to the regulations as set out by the minister. The next section, also in relation to the appeals board, we're saying that we should regulate the qualifications in relation to that such members being members of that members have the necessary experience in demarcation, legal training and experience, and as I've already alluded to, in relation to information technology, and also that the members of the appeals board must be members of South African origin, or be South Africans. We are proposing, because the board is for 7 years, that the term of the appeals board also should be 7 years. And we also, section 42 deals with the designation of positions of the qualifications of the chairperson and deputy chairpersons of the appeals board. There should be certain regulations that deals with how we want this, which qualities do we want this chairperson and deputy chairperson to have. That will be outlined also in the regulations to be determined, to be regulated by the minister. Section 43 will deal with the process, the proceedings in dealing with the appeals. What should happen, what should be needed for a person who is objected to take the matter up to the appeals section. Section 44 deals with conflicts and disclosure of interest by members of the Demarcation Appeals Authority. So they should not be conflicted when they then decide on such matters. Section 43 deals with the conditions of the acting members of the Demarcation Appeals Board after the expiry of the term of office. What should happen in relation to that? Section 46 deals with the remuneration benefits and members of the Demarcation Appeals Authority, which we also propose that they should also be in line with the Independent Remuneration Commission to fall in line with other public office bearers. Section 47 deals with the requirement of the MDB to provide admin assistance to the Appeals Board. So the Appeals Board support staff will be provided by the Municipal Demarcation Board. Section 48 deals with the municipal capacity assessment. This has not been done over years, and we are re-emphasizing that it is important that this should be done by the board, and there are certain factors that has to be taken into account when dealing with when conducting municipal capacity assessments. For example, operational, administrative, and financial management capacity of the municipality, infrastructure that enables the municipality to collect revenue and to govern, natural resources and any other drivers of the economic growth in that particular municipality, social cohesion and other factors considered by the MEC in the allocation of powers and functions of that municipality. By that way, we are able to realize the functionality of such municipalities and such wards if the Demarcation Board will, on a yearly basis, conduct municipal capacity assessments. Section 43 is aimed at providing the minister in consultation with the board of directors to make regulations to ensure guidelines. I've already indicated in relation to what is expected in relation to the qualities of members of the board, and also lastly, Chairperson, it's in the Section 50 that we're proposing, which is aimed at empowering the board to issue summons in cases of persons with critical information needed to carry its functions, meaning that if there are people with information that can assist the demarcation board to do its job, we are proposing that they be given the power to summon such person to come and assist. That will be the end of the presentation on the municipal demarcation proposal. It's for next year.
It's very helpful that because then we can prepare ourselves knowing what it seems is almost an overhaul.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On Section 4 on funding, and Section 4 also relate to Section 20. We need to be clear about the implications of getting a board such as the MDP to raise its own funding. What I was saying exactly, where should they get this money? From other agencies internationally, or what? And then you say, subject to treasury approval,
and so on. We just need to think through that kind of a proposal, because everyone else gets money from Parliament, and if we open the door and allow for money to be raised elsewhere, what are you going to say? What are the rules? What are the guidelines? The second point is on Section 17. It's just really a minor point about use of language, separation of powers. Can we get better wording than that? Because separation of powers means something else. The other thing is we need to be clear about what problems are we seeking to solve or resolve. If there's a one matter, must not go about in a roundabout way. We must just say what is the problem in relation to what. And then, having said that, make specific proposals to solve that kind of problem. Otherwise, we talk about the problem in general terms, and we may not arrive at the right kind of answers. Section 36 there, my document doesn't, the sentence is not complete right at the end of that part. And then under Section 40, there's talk there about criteria including experience. But it's not clear, I mean, what are we talking about? Even the word experience twice.
Chair, thank you. It's not often that I agree with Honourable Masondo, but in this instance I do. We're trying to address a problem that we don't actually know what the problem is. We're best of friends, Chair. Chair, I just said we disagreed. I didn't say we were enemies. Chair, my point is that we're trying to address problems that we don't know what the problem is. That's the first issue. The second issue that I have with this is that we don't actually have draft legislation in front of us. So to try and discuss these individual clauses right now is very premature, because we don't know what the actual draft legislation is going to say. I would suggest that we regard this as a high-level briefing on the legislation that's coming to us, and when the time frames are that we can expect it to come before the committee, but that we don't go into a clause-by-clause discussion, because it's way too premature. There's been no public consultation. There's been no draft bill before us. And if we start trying to discuss, well, what does this mean and what does that mean, and what is, to use Honourable Masondo's example, what does experience mean, we're going to end up bogged down in detail that may well be addressed when the draft legislation comes before us. I really think that this is very, very premature to bring the detail of the clauses when we don't have draft legislation.
No, we are right. The point is that you may have a broader question at the principle and policy level, not on the details of it, because otherwise we'll be preempting something that is too far from now. Maybe the bill is going to be introduced next year, March, because February can't be introduced in February, I guess, would be March. And then April may decide to go to public hearing for 1 month. In fact, there will be a lot of interest on this one, because you're also proposing now that also they should look at the broadly demarcation for provinces. And I think by that time we would not have resolved the Matatiela issue. The Mumutre and other areas, Mutibe, Stad, all those issues that have been raised. But I think you are right. The intention really is not to have detailed discussion. It's just for members at a philosophical level to what are the political and political issues that they want to raise, not necessarily to go clause by clause, because section by section, because you're not dealing with the bill right now. It's an idea that is put forward to amend the existing one. In fact, it's just overhauling it completely, just to ensure that we establish it that way. Okay? Tishi and then Chubi.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The team that is here, I forgot to introduce someone from SALGA, is also here, and because we work very closely with SALGA as well. One of the questions, one of the questions is, what are we solving? What is the problem? What is the problem statement? I think we might not have articulated it in the manner in which it's quite clear. However, these amendments were informed by, you know, the inputs from the previous boards in terms of gaps as they were implementing these and demarcation process review task team report, where there was a team that was appointed to look at how best can we improve, and lessons learned by the current board from previous redetermination, issues of litigation, and what the courts have been pronouncing with regard to that, legislative gaps, inputs from stakeholders, etc. So based on those gaps, you know, it informed this process. And I also agree that because the bill is not yet finalized, to be able to have something structured in a proper legislation, these are just clauses, these are initial thoughts in terms of what are the emerging challenges that require that we come up with a bill. I'm going to ask Mr. Shuping to respond. SALGA is here, the head of legal is also here, and the team members, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Members and Honorable Chair. Yes, indeed, the more details will be in the draft that will be bringing to Parliament. But just maybe to give honourable members a feel of why certain things were included, as per the questions that were asked. In relation to the voting stations, which is the responsibility of the Independent Electoral Commission, after certain processes have taken place, there is the process of the minister responsible for local government to determine the formula for the number of councillors. And once that has been done, then there will be a process of ward delimitation process. And councillors or municipalities are not to determine voting stations where they are situated. That's the responsibility of the independent level. But that will be spelled out when we have the bill. But just to make to Alicia that the responsibility thereof does not lie with councils or with municipalities to establish or to determine where voting stations should be. That is the responsibility of the Independent Electoral Commission after the process I've outlined of the number of councillors having been determined, the formula thereof, and then the ward limitation process has been followed. With regard to funding, we listen to the demarcation board, and we had a problem that's come also in relation to funding from outside, from the national fiscals. The board indicated that in some instances they will require the work that has been done by research institutions, and they are of the opinion that such work will enhance the kind of work that they are doing so that they come to a broader determination. And that is why we said we should include that should not be done outside the national treasury regulations, but because we are of the opinion that if once donors are funding the board, that may result in taking away the independence of the board itself and how the board should conduct its work. But this is a work in progress. We will look into it, but we have also raised that matter with the board in relation to that. The separation of powers.
Surely, as far as I know, the staff is protected. But then we do this.
days outside the formal man that is in the palace. That's the thinking also for the notation board.
That was the thinking. But we said that this should be done within the parameters of the law, so that the independence of the board should be upheld. On the issue of separation of powers, in relation to we are proposing that the CEO, the manager now, should be referred to as the CEO for purposes of accountability in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. But there is a clause that is being proposed that in the absence of the CEO, then a member of the board shall act as the CEO. Now, we said we need to put the mechanism in place to separate what will be the role of that person acting as the CEO. Because that person is a director of the board, and once he or she assumes that position, where do we then draw the line? So that's what we should be putting in the bill to distinguish between that. The criteria for the experience and the qualification, we put it that we should have as soon as possible regulations that determine that. So in the regulations, like we have in other things, regulations will spell out clearly what kind of experience do we need, what kind of qualifications do we need for such board members, and we will then spell it out clearly in that. Other issues, I think the colleagues are here. They may want to add on some of the things that have been raised. The DG has also indicated that almost other matters can come very clearly once we have done thorough consultation, public participation, and we have taken this to Parliament. It will clearly come out what our intentions are in dealing with this. As for what is there that we want to correct here, the DG rightfully pointed out that our proposals are mainly based on what the request has been made to us and through past experiences and what the board previously has indicated to us, that these are the implementable challenges and we address for them.
Thanks, Chair. My understanding, Chair, on this bill, so that we can do justice, I thought that it's going to be presented and then we just take it and only seek question for clarity. And let's not engage. Otherwise, Chair, we'll engage it in wrongfully. So I felt that maybe as members, let's listen to the presentation, present both papers, tell us what the aim, they've already indicated the aim of this bill. Then we go back. Then we will come back on it. Chair, where we start to discuss some details.
That will make my life very easier, Chairperson.
Very helpful to you. We know exactly what section and section what is the
Based on that, DG, Honorable Chair, I'll take even less than 5 minutes to present the proposed amendments to the Municipal Structures Act. The first this is just to indicate that there has been some work done. Take just briefly the committee in relation to the kind of work that we have done up to so far. We have a draft bill in relation to this. We presented the draft bill to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor in January, and also DPME also gave us the pre-certification in relation to that bill. And we presented before the GNA cluster in March 2016. And we also published for public comment on the 25th of May 2016, and we received those comments in relation to that bill. We had a workshop on the 24th of June 2016. We also had a workshop on the 9th of November to look into all the other proposed amendments. I must indicate, Chairperson, that this bill was as a result of the IEC requesting us to give effect to certain uncertainties in relation to the interpretation of certain clauses in the Structures Act. They created, for example, how we interpret days, if you say within 14 days, 17 days, do we call the court days or not normal days. We needed to bring certainty to that. And there were also other amendment proposals that were made to us, which were also included. But in the main, that was the request from the IEC. This particular bill is also presented today by the minister and the deputy minister in relation to how far are we, and what do we then intend doing and introducing this to Parliament officially, so that we had go to the other side. I'll just indicate that the amendment is in relation to the electoral matters, as I've already indicated, the 14-day period, the definition of the declared elections, so that when is a councillor declared a councillor? At what stage? Where there's some different interpretations, we have clarified that. The allocation of excessive seats, we have clarified that in the proposal. Also on governance matters, we've already put something in relation to that. And other matters that were proposed outside the request that has been made by the IEC. I won't go much close by close. Yeah, safe. Yes, and then the last one is in relation to this one. No, this that's the timelines in relation to when we intend in October this year, after all the other processes that have taken place, to introduce to Parliament this month, and we we are proposing that the structure set. We are proposing the date the process of public participation and after consultation with all other relevant stakeholders, including cabinet, and then finally come to Parliament around between July and November for purposes of introducing to Parliament with all the relevant matters. So that's what we want to do. And we are recommending that the portfolio committee take note of the presentation and also note that we intend taking these two bills, and this, especially this structure set, to cabinet to Parliament before the end of this year.
No, I do not. That the bill will only going through the different parliamentary routes and will eventually come to Parliament in the new year in about July. But at the NAPC, it is indicated that the faster this bill, I'm saying the faster it comes to the relevant routes, because the NAPC is pushing together the bill that must be attended to this year. So I was alerting you, Chair, on that one.
According to the table here, are there any public consultation that have already taken place? Because there is a date there that it's there for this bill to be introduced for this year. It should have gone through those public consultations. Is there anything? I'm looking at the date that is given to this program, 7 of June.
Just a question. We've been hearing about the Intergovernmental Monitoring Support and Intervention Bill since 2013. I don't see this on any timetable. In 2015, the then DG promised that it would be introduced at the end of 2015. Last year, the Deputy Minister indicated that it would be introduced in the last financial year. And I don't see any efforts whatsoever from the department to bring this bill to closure. Intergovernmental Monitoring Support and Interventions Bill.
Ms. Ndaba will talk to this one. I will take this smaller one. That one of the intervention bill. The head of legal services will deal with it. Chairperson, in the presentation, we alluded to the fact that we published for public comment the bill. We received certain comments from certain organizations and provinces, and we have not yet in national conducted what may be called public participation process, but it was published for public comment, and we received comments. We are aware that Parliament, once we introduce to Parliament, Parliament will then conduct public hearings. So we have not yet gone to the stage of public hearings, but we only went as far as publishing for public comment. As for the second one of about the intervention bill, I'm younger.
I've just been briefed that the draft now is ready, and we just need to brief the minister, you know, so that he can guide us in terms of the next steps.
Shouldn't it be on the timetable? Like, we're going to brief the minister here, we intend to introduce to Parliament here, etc. Shouldn't that be on the timetable of legislation before us? That's my worry, Chair.
Thank you. Chairperson, this was only to relate to the honourable members that we also intend making some amendments to the system saying, but that is not within this year's timetable. And we have consulted with provinces. They have given us indication in relation to which other sections are giving them implementable challenges. And we have noted them here, and we have just indicated that we will, in the next financial year, maybe include this, because we are at an embryonic stage of consulting. We've only consulted provinces. We are now consulting SAUSA and other relevant stakeholders. We have not even started crafting the bill itself. So we are just informing that we will be embarking on such a process.
Good, thank you very much. I will read it and I will wait for it. Thank you very much, DG, for the presentation of the bills. I hope that the initiation one also will be considered not far, because it's a very critical one. Because in Gauteng, I think it's becoming very uncontrollable, this thing of initiation. It may also lead to people start fighting and cause a lot of harm for society. Hopefully, already we'll be finalizing it. It's almost as complex as traditional leaders were. But hopefully, learning from this experience, we'll be able to do that. Honorable members, and tomorrow your meeting is a joint meeting with the water and sanitation to deal with the disaster or drought that is facing us in the Western Cape. We are meeting with them, having a discussion. But the program will be finalized today just to ensure that members, they have in their diaries. They shouldn't be called at the meeting tomorrow. They must have in their diaries. By the end of a day today, the secretary will circulate the program until the end of this year. Ending of the year, really, we are also intending to go to teach you, may go with us. Chief Mason, they want to lead us to China. 2nd to 9th of December. They want to take us to China. And Melham, I'm told that is extremely happy that he will be going to China after a very successful Congress of the Communist Party of China. And they are going there with, of course, as they say, money available. We'll go there and see what you want to do. The program is going to be circulated to everyone. will be put also on the pink papers or the meetings for ensuring that members really know on that. Honorable Kubisa, we are sorry that in our notification it says G26 when is S26, and we are sorry for that. But at least we are here now. We are very impressed. I thought you are new in Parliament, you wouldn't know all the corners, but I think we have found the venue. We are sorry for taking you to G26 when we meant S26, and we are sorry for that, for everyone was affected by that. And the secretary is going to finalize this. And then the bill then has been adopted by the committee. The report of the committee has been adopted. And then normally then we'll find a space in the calendar of the Parliament for us to have a debate. I think we'll be next month, have a debate on this, and then allow it then to go to NSOP. By next year, I think the NSOP will be also having time to look at the bill. They may also decide to engage to province by province, area by area. Whatever they decide will be up to NSOP. It's a very expensive exercise. But they are very helpful that members are thinking that through it one bill. Others are coming. DG, as you make this presentation, DG, we hope then you'll get them accordingly, timely, in order for us then to have thorough time to work, because we want to engage with civil society, broadly speaking, NGOs and other research organizations in our country that assist us a lot. We do appreciate their role, though. They are playing a very critical role to engage with us as members of parliament. They have been very positive. And when we're dealing with this traditional one, they were very positive. They raised some objections, but also they were listening. They were prepared to listen to logic and understanding. We really appreciated working with them. We hope that we are going to work with them that way for some time to come to ensure that we make contribution to betterment of the living condition of all South Africans. We are thankful of that. We hope that the venue secretary will be convened to members. When are we meeting with the department or portfolio committee of water affairs? And they also will invite other people who have been always wanted to come to us next week, and then they'll come and make some presentation. And then I think also will come also to deal with the question of recovery and see how we get to on this matter. As far as we know now, there's no harm for us in adjourning the meeting. And thank you for your contribution, honorable members. The meeting is accordingly adjourned until tomorrow. Thank you very much.